It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live! Welcome to Just a Bit Outside with Stark and Massaro. I am your host, Ian Starkman, and I am joined by my co-host, Mike Massaro. Lots of great sports that we will touch on today, including Packers-Ravens game of the week, NFL playoff pitcher gets a shakeup, bowl season begins and the transfer portal is hot, COVID disrupts the NHL, and a little father-son time for Tiger and Charlie this weekend at the PNC. But Mike, first, how was your sports week?
Stark, and to you and to all of our listeners, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Hope everybody is keeping safe, doing well, and can enjoy the holiday season this coming week. For me, my plans for the weekend, this past weekend, were kind of thrown out the window with, you know, the announcements here in Ontario. But also, we got our first, or I guess not our first, but a good amount of snow on Saturday. So I didn't really want to head out, you know, out west to Guelph area and sit in traffic for multiple hours.
Are you a shovel guy or are you a snowplow guy?
That name again is Mr. Plow. No, I don't have a plow, but I just want to throw that in there. We have a snow blower. I had a much nicer one, but my parents decided to give that one to my brother. So that's up at his place. So I have a smaller one now, but it does the job. It does the job. You got to do a little bit of shoveling and snow blowing. So that, that kind of took Saturday. I was going to head to Guelph as well to watch some of the curling, as I mentioned.
Right.
Didn't get there. So it is what it is. I don't mind the snow. So that was kind of Saturday, and Sunday was just filled with football as usual. And, getting ready for the holidays.
Look at you. Just man of the seasons. You just roll along with each season and get right into it. You're very jolly. I like it. I was romantic guy this weekend. It was my wife's birthday, so I surprised her with a little trip up to Deerhurst for the weekend. We did the whole, spa package followed by an adult dinner, which for those of you that have kids know what it is. But, when you half dress up, you show up a little bit late, maybe you already had a couple cocktails before you get to the dinner, then you're just happy that no one's spilling anything on you while you eat. So it was one of those kind of dinners, which was great. Deerhurst, beautiful, beautiful resort. Kind of reminds me, Mike, if you haven't been there, kind of reminds me of the resort from Dirty Dancing. It's got the full seasons. Everything goes on there. Probably back in the day, it was the happening place to go for all the wealthy Toronto folks. And now it's, just us schmoes going up there for a weekend away. But golf course in the summer, winter's got a lot of trails. And it did snow on the Saturday, which is beautiful. We went for a walk. Loved it. But you know what? Being a sports guy like I am, you have to be smart with these decisions on when to go away, when to take your wife away for weekends, because you don't want to do it on a big weekend, right? Like a football playoff weekend or maybe a big bowl game or the Leafs having a big game. And I just planned it out perfectly. It couldn't have been better. Now, it was the first Saturday of bowl games, and there wasn't too much on the docket that was, must see. So nothing too crazy there. I wasn't missing it. I wasn't missing a full college football Saturday slate. Didn't want to miss out on one of those. There were supposed to be two NFL games. One of them then got postponed. The Leafs game was postponed. So I really didn't miss too much on Saturday. And I was back on Sunday with lots of time to watch all the football games. And it was perfect. Made her happy. And you gotta play it right. So you husbands out there, maybe boyfriends, you got to play it right. Get these in now while you can, so that when it's a big sports day and you need to be left alone, you got one in the chamber just to say, hey, I need a pass on today.
Fair enough. You're kind of speaking to the wrong demographic here in our communication, but or do what I do. Don't get married and every weekend is your weekend.
Oh, it's just about time, Mike. You know what? You're gonna some nice young lady's gonna send you a little DM after this episode, not knowing that you're a single man, and think, you know what? That Mike Mazzaro's voice is just so beautiful on the podcast. I think he's right up my alley. It'll be a Christmas miracle. You just wait and see. So, ladies, feel free to slide into his DMs. But another thing, again, being for the parents out there, again, not for you, Mike. Today was the first day of Christmas vacation for the kids, which means I'm working and they're just running around the house like crazy animals. The house was destroyed. Christmas decorations falling. You know, they got scissors out, just randomly cutting paper. Race cars all over the house. They attempted to build a 9-hole mini golf course throughout the house. Only got up to about the 3rd or 4th hole and then just moved on to something else. And then eventually I was just like, enough of this. Here's a bowl of popcorn. Couple balls of water, get into the garage. You guys can shoot pucks around for a little bit. They end up playing in the snow, but I totally get the song now, you know, the Christmas song that mom and dad can hardly wait for the kids to get back to school. That's what the holidays is. It's just battling through till they get back to school. Knock on wood that they actually go back to school and it's not back to virtual learning, but it's a disaster. It's only day one, only day one.
Well, hang in there, man. It's only a couple more weeks, maybe a couple more.
I can ship them over to your house for a day, right?
No.
Oh, okay. No.
I have too many decorations here that they could destroy, and that wouldn't make Uncle Mike too pleased.
Yeah, we don't want to upset you. So, hey, we got a ton of great sports to talk about. Our T5's coming up right after this break, so stick around. I so did not want this to be the game of the week. I mean, I am happy for my friend, Mr. Mazzaro, that his team is playing so good, but I think I'm getting sick of Mr. Rodgers. But as an unbiased sports fan, here is our T1. Aaron Rodgers tied the franchise record for most passing touchdowns while leading his Packers to a 31-30 nail-biter over the Baltimore Ravens. Lamar Jackson was out with a sprained ankle, but Tyler Huntley nearly led the Ravens all the way back from down 31-17. But again, they went for 2 points to win and came up short. Mike, was it the right call by John Harbaugh to go for two this week?
I think I'm a little bit more old school in my approach. And I think there was a lot of instances this week where teams were being overly aggressive to go for points. And, you know, I guess that's what the analytics are saying. But for me, in tight games like this, you always go for the points, get the sure thing, especially with a kicker like Justin Tucker. I mean, you get that point and then you force Rodgers and the Packers to go downfield to try and get a score in 43 seconds, I think, was left, something along those lines. Or you take your chances and go to overtime and see what happens. And it's not like the Ravens weren't able to move the ball. Tyler Huntley played fantastic for them.
See, but the only thing I would say, Mike, Harbaugh's got to be thinking, it essentially comes down to a game of chance with a coin flip. It really does. Because if the Packers get the ball, you know Rodgers is, I'm going for the touchdown. I'm going for the win right now. Let's end this. And he's got the capability of doing it. We've talked about his demeanor on the field and how he's the most trusted guy to have the ball right now. And he would get it. And that then comes down to a coin flip. Well, you get the ball in your hand. You got a couple yards to get in there. I think it was the right decision. Now, it looks bad that it's been wrong twice, right? And essentially has cost them what we believe to be 2 wins, but there's no guarantee. There was no guarantees they were going to win those games in overtime. Yeah, there was a guarantee they were going to kick the field goal, or sorry, the extra point to get to the overtime, but no guarantees to win it. So I think I like the idea of them going for it in 2. Now, I don't like the play selection either time. I think both of these quarterbacks throwing the ball in that situation was wrong. I think Huntley, who had a great game, I mean, he was 28 for 40, which shocks me because he doesn't really throw the ball that well. He rushed for 2 TDs. He looked decent. Clearly, he'll get another shot with another team next season, but give him the ball to run it in. Have a play set up where there is a fake, there's a run pass option, and he's able to run it into the end zone.
My thing is let's pretend, you know, here's a scenario. It's playoffs. you score. It's 31-30, 20 seconds left on the clock or whatever. Are you kicking the extra point or are you going for the win?
Fair, I know. The playoffs, different story.
It is a different story. But my thing is, and this is the point I made 2 weeks ago when they did this against Pittsburgh and it backfired, the Ravens 3 weeks ago, three, 4 weeks ago, were the first seed in the AFC. Now, they've lost three in a row and they're out of the playoffs. If the playoffs start today, they're not in. And guess what? They got to play Cincinnati in Cincinnati this coming week. So, look, these decisions are, you know, we can point the finger. You know, the Ravens have always been an aggressive team, and that's their MO. That's fine. But, I mean, when the things don't work out in their favor, this is a team that has dropped seven positions in the playoff hunt and may not make it now.
But the Ravens also used to be a defense-first team, and a defense-first team would kick the extra point and say, let's go to overtime because our defense will shut you down. I don't think that confidence is there anymore in this Ravens defense.
Well, they had a lot of guys out, you know, through injury, through COVID. It was a, you know, a depleted group. And, yeah, the Ravens aren't the Ravens that we remember from the past, you know, 20-some years defensively. It's a much different makeup. But, I mean, you know, we can look at this and see what happens. 3 weeks left for these guys. But the fact of the matter is, you know, maybe more so the Pittsburgh game, that decision could end up costing them in the end here, especially now in the AFC North. It, you know, all four teams are wide awake for a shot.
And I mean, on the other side of it, Green Bay looked good again. They become the first team this season to clinch a division title. Rodgers threw for three TD passes. He now has 442 on his career, tying Brett Favre for the franchise record. 13 TDs and no interceptions in his last four games. And I got to say it, I think he's the MVP right now in the NFL.
Yeah, I think so. And to remove my bias, he's the reigning MVP, and to knock those guys off, somebody has to have a substantial year. And I mean, I think Jonathan Taylor deserves strong consideration, but if we remember, you know, Derrick Henry, the year he ran for 2,000 yards, he didn't win MVP either. And Taylor's a little short of that right now, but, you know, if Rodgers keeps this up or the last three games of the season, it's hard to pick against him.
Yeah, and last week, I think you mentioned your issue with Green Bay was the special teams. Well, my issue with Green Bay this week was the defense, which seemed to be letting this Ravens team that had their backup quarterback in, maybe missing a few pieces, just let them crawl back into the game. Obviously, they're going to have to tighten that up before the playoffs. I think they will. I think they're a major threat come Super Bowl time, come the playoffs. And I think that Rodgers understands the situation of this season, which is win it all right now and end this the way it needs to be ended, with him walking out as the Super Bowl champion, the NFL MVP, and saying, what's next? Where can I go to next? And I think they're playing that way as a team, kind of rallying around him. Although I kind of mentioned how I'm getting sick of Mr. Rodgers, I don't think that's the case with his teammates. I genuinely think they love this guy and they play really hard for him. I think he's got to tighten up a few things, and they're real contenders.
Yeah, Kenny Clark was out on the COVID list for the Packers, and he is, you know, the first line of defense on the line defensively. And, you know, they've been winning these games 11-3, and two of their better defensive players haven't played for a significant amount of time. They can get both of them back, or at least one of them back down the stretch here. I think the defense will get even better. Just on the Rodgers front, I think he re-signs in Green Bay. I don't see him going anywhere else. I mean, you know, where else is he going to go and have this amount of chemistry and success? For a guy who's 38 years old, I mean, it's a hell of a risk. He bets on himself. He'll probably win more times than he won't. But if you got a special group here, which, you know, I think a lot of people think, and you can re-sign a guy like Devontae Adams and keep him in town, this group can be dominant for years to come. I mean, LaFleur's a hell of a coach, three division titles, three plus seasons over at least 10 wins. No other NFL head coach has done that in history. So to start their career anyway. So there's just a lot to like, and I don't know, you want to walk away from that.
It was an unusual week in sports, but the NFL just trucked along with their week 15, and that will be our T2. All games are still scheduled to be played despite the NFL having their highest amount of players test positive. Games were shifted around to Monday and even Tuesday to make sure they are played. But Sunday, we saw the playoff picture tighten up with big wins from some of the top teams like Kansas City and Indianapolis, while upsets from the Lions and Saints. Mike, what was your biggest takeaway from week 15?
You know, just looking at the NFC, keeping that trend up, the Lions beating Arizona was significant, and New Orleans shutting out Tampa on Sunday night. I mean, that game was terrible, but I think a couple storylines looking forward. Arizona now, you know, a couple losses here. They haven't looked real sharp, and they've dropped from pretty much the top team in the NFL to the fourth seed now in the NFC. We still got 3 weeks to go, but, you know, now we're starting to fight for positions in some places. The other one for me, Tampa Bay now, they lose Chris Godwin for the year. Torn ACL and MCL, and for him too, he's a free agent. You know, I'm sure somebody's going to still give him a deal, but, you know, could miss significant time next season as well. Who knows? But they've also lost Mike Evans last night or Sunday night in the game, and Leonard Fournette. You know, three big powerhouse offensive players for a team that has aspirations of repeating. So, you know, some interesting. Interesting storylines as we head here into the last 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, and touching on that Saints game, I mean, good for the Saints. They go on the road to Tampa Bay and shut out Tom Brady with a real boring 9-0 win. I mean, Brady was 26 for 48 with no TDs, one interception. Yeah, he was missing a couple big weapons there, as you talked about, but I'm really worried about this Bucs team being a factor in the playoffs. They got Carolina twice more than the Jets, so not that much of a tough schedule to finish off the year. They're going to easily clinch the NFC South, but I still don't like them going very far. They're going to get a home game in the first round of the playoffs, sure, but they're going to have to play a tough team, and I don't see Brady leading this team without those weapons all being there and that defense not being as strong as it was last year to a potential repeat of this season. So that was a telling game showing that the Saints could take advantage of them and get by them, because now everyone's going to look at this and say, huh, when we play the Bucs, maybe we can do this and do that and be able to get by them, no problem.
Yeah, the Saints have always, for some reason, played Tampa well, regardless of who's been there, Brady or not. I mean, it's kind of shifted over the years with Breeze and stuff, but the Saints and Bucks always play each other tough regardless. On the AFC side, I mean, it's super, super tight. You got 12 teams right now who have records of 500 or better. And I think I was reading between seeds 2 through 12, they're separated by 2 games. So, I mean, you know, we have a lot to play for here in the last few weeks of the season. A lot of teams are going to play each other. So, realistically, I think week 18 is going to be meaningful for a lot of teams, maybe for a division title, but certainly for a playoff spot.
Yeah, and adding in that extra game just puts a whole new wrinkle into how this season will end. And you mentioned the AFC there. Kansas City Chiefs. Great win on Thursday night. They're the top team in the AFC once again. They've now on a 7-game winning streak after beating the Chargers 34-28 in OT. Travis Kelce broke free in overtime. It was great to see 34-yard TD run to win the game and win it outright. Cover the number as well for you gamblers out there. I mean, Kelce's the main reason for the Chiefs getting back into Super Bowl contention as he picked up his game of late. They started to really roll. It's just another weapon for Mahomes. I mean, Mahomes finished 31 of 47 for a season high of 410 yards. What a game. He's still making a few questionable plays out there, which, you know, those decisions where you're like, what are you doing there, Patrick? And either ends up in an interception or a fumble, or he just gets sacked and they lose a lot of yardage, which kills any momentum. So I think he needs to really fix that. But all around, I think the Chiefs have really found their game again and are a serious threat for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, the one other thing to touch on with Kansas City is the play of their defense. Their defense has drastically turned things around over the past few weeks, and credit to Steve Spagnuolo and the group there that, you know, they've really made a difference. We always knew Kansas City could score, but they were having, you know, a bit of problems, and the offense was going to wake up eventually, and it has, but the defense has played exceptionally well over this winning streak, and they've put themselves from, you know, maybe an afterthought to the top team in the conference again, and might be hard to knock them off that.
Yeah, and just touching on that game on the other side, Justin Herbert and the Chargers, I mean, he gave them the lead with about 2 minutes and 19 seconds left in the game. Played one of his best games in his young career, 2 passing TDs. He ran another one in. This will be a fun QB matchup in the AFC West for years to come. I think it's going to be awesome to see these two play interdivision. They're going to play twice a year. Love it. Then you look over at another interdivision rival that we need to touch on as well. Buffalo, New England. We saw that game in the snow a couple weeks ago. Then Buffalo goes out, beats Carolina 31-14. Allen looks to be moving good on that sore foot. While New England loses to the Colts on Saturday night, now you got the Patriots 9-5. The Bills 8-6. They're playing at Gillette on Boxing Day. It'll be a blast. I can't believe they're not flexing this game to the Sunday night, but this will be the deciding game to see who's possibly going to win that division.
Yeah, I think if New England can get that and get to 10-5, you know, they're 2 games ahead of the Bills, and both of them have favorable matchups to finish things out. So, you know, I think we said last week that this game for Buffalo is really going to decide. I think a loss to the Patriots pretty much gives the division to New England. And then, like I said, they both have, right now anyways, on paper, favorable matchups to close things out. And both teams should be in the playoffs, barring anything drastic, I would say.
Now, when you have Christmas dinner, you get there early and you start by having a few apps. But everyone says, don't fill up on those apps because the main course is coming soon. Well, why put the apps out then? Well, because we're hungry and we're going to eat them. Which brings us to bowl season and our T3. I'm just going to name a few of these bowls so we can all have a chuckle of what happened this weekend. We had the New Mexico Bowl, Independence Bowl, the Boca Raton Bowl, the Lending Tree Bowl, the New Orleans Bowl, and don't forget the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl. Some fun games seeing teams that don't normally play against each other and allows these kids one more showcase to play. Mike, before we talk about the playoffs, your thoughts on bowl season so far?
Who said we shouldn't have apps? Who questioned bringing out apps?
You know, they put the apps out and then they say, hey, don't eat too many of those because we got the dinner coming. Well, why are you putting the apps out? These bowl games are the app so far. We've had about 6 of them already. We're filling up on them. We're getting all we can, but we got to remember, we got 2-3 massive games still coming in a couple weeks.
Hey, man, I've never met an app I didn't like. Unless it has mushrooms in it, then it's a hard no for me. But anyway, Jimmy Kimmel playing the clarinet with the Oregon State Marching Band to kick things off in California. Interesting concept having him as the lead sponsor for this game. You know, kind of a fun one. Some of these games, that's what they are, right? It gives the guys an opportunity, like you said, to play in a bowl game. It's good for the school, good for, you know, some revenue and exposure and all those things. But obviously, we're looking forward to the bigger ones coming up. Me personally, I don't spend a whole lot of time watching these games. They don't really mean anything to me. I will watch the Las Vegas Bowl when the Badgers play against Arizona State. But beyond that, I'm looking forward to the college, you know, football playoffs and then some of the bigger bowls that will come before that. But, you know, bowl season, I mean, it's something on TV if you want to watch. But I mean, I don't pay a whole lot of attention to the games.
I always got it on. You got to know what games are being played, especially, you know, you got in normal times when during Christmas, the house is getting full and you got a lot of random relatives in your house. Just put on a game. It's always fun to look at and chit chat back and forth. The biggest shock for me this past weekend was BYU losing to UAB. BYU had only two losses all year. They probably thought of themselves as a top team, a top 10 team, excuse me, in the country. They finished at 13 going into the bowl season. The QB for BYU is Baylor Romney this past weekend because the top QB, Jaren Hall, was injured. Who knows if he's going to come back next year or look to move on. But this Romney kid just didn't play much at all this season and didn't play well. And it was disappointing. Didn't even get a TD in the bowl game. And that's what happens in these bowl games. If you're gambling on them or you're watching them, you make sure you dive in and find out who exactly is in the lineup, especially with COVID lurking, because a lot of these players aren't playing. So it's interesting to follow. Now BYU, who was ranked at 13, losing that game, obviously not finishing the season they want, but still, fun to see these bowls. They have some unique things. I know there's some interesting ones coming up in the next week as well.
Yeah. Before we touch on the playoffs and get into the meat of the college discussion, you know, I think it's important we touch on the transfer portal.
Yes.
For a little bit. Some big news there the past week or so. Quinn Ewers, who was a five-star recruit out of Southlake, Texas, you know, was set to go to the Texas Longhorns when Tom Herman was the coach. He was pretty much all but confirmed. Herman gets fired. They put in Steve Sarkisian, and he flips and goes to Ohio State. After 1 year at Ohio State now, he has entered the transfer portal and is going to the Texas Longhorns. He's got 4 years of eligibility. Casey Thompson, who was the Longhorns quarterback this year, has now entered the transfer portal because he knows he's out, but Ewers heads there along with freshman recruit Malik Murphy, Hudson Card, the other one on the roster there. So, I expect Ewers to be the guy in Texas and try to resurrect a 5-7 team last year, but they're all kind of vying for 2023 when Arch Manning becomes available. We'll see what happens. So, you know, I think a good bit of business for Texas, and they get the guy that they coveted in the end.
Yeah, and then also Spencer Radler, obviously, his plan was to win the Heisman this year for Oklahoma and then go right to the NFL as one of the top picks. That didn't work out when he lost his starting job. He enters the transfer portal, and now looks like he's going to be landing in South Carolina. So that was interesting as well. But I did want to also touch primetime Deion Sanders, who's coaching Jackson State, who actually wanted the Florida State job. They said no, even though he played there. He took the Jackson State job, and then he goes and steals Florida State's number one recruit, Travis Hunter, brings him over to Jackson State. They played in a bowl game on Saturday, losing, but I think after going 11-1, I think Deion's going to build a hell of a program here and a hell of a team, maybe stay one more year, then get a Power 5 job. All his players enter the portal and bring him with them wherever he goes.
That's like playing Madden or NHL, yeah, or something. You just trade everyone to your team, exactly, and start with another team. No, I mean, credit to him. 11-1, that's a hell of a record. He's doing some good stuff with Jackson State. He said he was going to shock everyone with the recruit class, and he definitely did.
Well, let's start, Mike, when we get into the playoffs here. Let's start with Alabama versus Cincinnati. Bama's minus 13.5 favorites as of right now in the Cotton Bowl against Cincinnati, who is the only undefeated team left. Bama has the ninth best total yards in the country, led by the Heisman winner, Bryce Young, and they average the fourth most points per game at 42.5. I mean, since he gets their yards via the run, and that's how they've been doing it most of the year. The eighth most points per game at 39.2. So these are two high-scoring teams that are going head-to-head. However, for me, Mike, the main reason I'm leaning Bama is they have the fifth-best rush defense in the country. And I know with 2 weeks off, Nick Saban, you know he's just going to put together some sort of shutdown defense structure that's going to force the Bearcats QB Desmond Ridder to throw the ball more. And he has thrown 7 interceptions in his last 7 games. So look for lots of turnovers by Bama, and they're going to control that game on the defensive side. And when they get the ball, Young's going to put on a show. I like Bama, and I like Bama by a lot in this game.
I mean, it's hard to count Bama out in the playoffs. You know, it's funny heading into, and I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, heading into the SEC championship, they were kind of stringing together wins, and everybody kind of expected Georgia would keep the you know, keep the one seed and beat Bama for the title. Bama blows them out of the water in that game and kind of reminds everyone what they are. The one thing with Cincy for me, a couple interesting stats. Second in the nation pass defense, third red zone defense, and fourth in scoring defense. I don't think a lot of people are going to be giving Cincinnati much of a chance in this game. You know, I'm still probably picking Alabama to win, but I think Cincinnati is going to keep it a lot closer than people think. This is a good group of players. Luke Fickell's done a hell of a job with this group. His name's been mentioned in the NFL rumors. Don't know if that's what he's looking to do, but, you know, maybe eventually he will either do that or maybe go on to a bigger program. But what he's done in Cincinnati with this group, they deservedly are in the playoffs, and I think they're going to give Alabama a game. I still like Bama to win, but I think Cincinnati is going to impress some people.
Nice. Yeah. It'll be fun to watch, but that again will be the appetizer, Mike, to the big game, which is on New Year's Eve, Michigan versus Georgia. Now, Georgia is -8 point favorites in the Orange Bowl against Michigan right now. Both teams are 12-1 and are probably surprised to be playing against each other. I mean, Georgia thought they'd be the number one team, but they slipped up against Bama. And Michigan, they had to have everything work out perfectly for them to not only get to the playoff, just to get to the Big Ten championship. And it did. It worked out great for them. Obviously, that big win over Ohio State and then beating Iowa in the Big Ten championship. Now, here when it comes to the game, Georgia has just NFL-style defense. They've shut down every team this year but Bama. Here are their point totals against this year. I'm going to read them off to you, Mike. 3, 7, 13, 0, 0, 10, 13, 7, 6, 17, 7, 0, and then the 24 points against Bama. That's not happening again. They're going to smother the Michigan offense. I don't trust the Michigan offense. McNamara, he does get sacked quite often, 5 times in his last 5 games. They don't really have much of a running game. And if Georgia's front seven can push them, there'll be nowhere for him to hide, and they will completely shut him down. I do like Georgia in this game. However, that 8 points scares me. 8 points, not really a football number, really means they got to beat him by 2 touchdowns, and that's a lot, especially in a semifinal game with 2 top teams. And it's going to be a public play on Michigan, so hopefully that number comes down to 7, maybe 6.5, and I'll jump all over it. But as of right now, 8 points, I don't care. Give me Georgia. Give me the 8 points. We all deserve the Georgia-Bama rematch. Let's do it again for the national championship. So I'm pulling for that.
You know what? I think Michigan's powered by their run game. Hassan Haskins is, you know, a good running back, and I expect that Michigan's going to rely on their run game to try and get in this game. Defensively, I think it's going to be a great matchup. I think it could be a low-scoring matchup. Michigan has a respectable defense led by Ian Hutchinson, but, you know, I don't know. I'm not as confident in Georgia as you are. I do think that they are still, you know, probably pound for pound the best team. But in a one-off game like this, I mean, Michigan, the one thing for Michigan, though, you know, they've kind of got hot and hit their stride as the season has went on here. Has this layoff here of a few weeks in between games hurt them and their momentum? I don't know. I think it's going to be another great game. I think both teams are fully capable of not only winning this game, but winning the national championship. And I think this one's going to be really close, actually. I could see like a 3 or 4 point game.
So who are you picking?
I'm going to go blue. I'm going to say Michigan Wolverines beat Georgia.
That's definitely picking with your heart, Mike. Georgia's a much better team. The fear is if Bama and Georgia just blow these teams out in the semifinal, you know the conversation is going to be SEC's the powerhouse. They're the only real conference in college football. None of the other conferences even matter. Let's have our own superpower conference. That's going to be the talk. And it's going to look that way because the Big Ten, if they can't even compete in this, I mean, it's a sad state of affairs for that conference.
Well, you know, now having heard that, all the more reason for me to back Michigan.
They're playing and for the conference. Big Ten.
They're playing for our conference, you know, and I would love, you know, love to see a Michigan-Cincinnati final. I don't know if that's going to be the case, but look, I mean, I think both games are going to be excellent, and I feel like this year, you know, most years when Alabama's got the one beside them, it's going to take something special to knock them out, right? I don't think they're as untouchable as they have been. And I truly believe it's going to be, you know, two really good semifinals and a good final here. I mean, you never know. It's been a crazy season. Let's keep it going for the playoffs.
Well, we all navigate this latest wave of COVID. The sports world and leagues are trying to hang on for dear life, and that includes the NHL. Which will be our T4. All last week, NHL games were being postponed as players were added to the COVID list daily until it was too high to manage. On the weekend, all cross-border games were postponed until after the Christmas break, and teams were closing facilities all over the league. Meanwhile, in an odd twist, one of the top coaches and all-around nice guys, Paul Maurice, steps down as the coach of the Winnipeg Jets. Mike, start us off with your thoughts on Paul Maurice.
I'm a big fan of Paul Maurice. I think I've mentioned that in a couple shows and have been, you know, for some time, even before he coached the Leafs. I've really liked him. I think he's always been very honest and open when he speaks. I think he's someone who is very aware of, you know, the situation himself. He can speak really eloquently and put things into perspective, and has always been a really good quote, good sense of humor. There's a lot to like about him. On top of the fact, he's a good hockey coach.
Right.
I mean, fourth in the NHL in games coach, 1,684, sixth in wins with 775. Eventually, he is going to get another job. I think for him, he recognized, and not many coaches in any sport will realize this, it's time for, and he said it was time for a different voice. I feel like I've taken this group as far as I could, and he stepped away. There's going to be another opportunity for him. Maybe he needs to recharge his own batteries a bit, and it kind of felt that way listening to him speak on Friday, but a great coach and a better person, and he's needed in the game. I'm sure he will come back somewhere in the right fit.
You know what, Mike? It was just odd timing. And I remember seeing it on my phone and thinking, what? He's stepping down? And my first thought was, there's a scandal here. Something went wrong. Something happened where the team said to him, hey, Paul, you either need to step down or we're firing you for cause. And unfortunately, that's where our minds go nowadays when you see a coach step down like this. We obviously saw it in Florida with Quinville. So it was just odd timing. And instead of being fired, why did he do this? The Jets are 14-11-5. They sit fifth in the Central. Not where they thought they would be. Not where they were expecting to be. They obviously had high expectations. It was a bad end to last year, getting swept out of the playoffs. But I think that he just didn't feel the team was good enough to win. And I think he knew that. I think the general manager knows that. And they want to do the change now. I'm sure there was some conversation about how things were going to go in the second half of the year, and Maurice just wasn't involved in the direction it was going to go and said, I better step out. And that direction, unfortunately, Winnipeg Jets fans, is most likely going to be a complete breakdown of this team, selling parts off during the trade deadline and starting to do a quick rebuild kind of with your nucleus. And I think Maurice just didn't want to be a part of that. So he thought, now's the time I'm going to step away.
The only thing with that, and I somewhat disagree, and you know, you're obviously more up on the game than I am, but it just felt like Winnipeg was considered to be a serious threat this season. And it's not like they're having a bad season. You know, they're in a playoff hunt right now, but I just think sometimes, you know, it's very rare that people will do what he did, you know, read the situation, say, maybe this isn't going to work out as, you know, I feel it could, and I'll take myself out of it. And, you know, it I think it takes a lot of awareness, not only self-awareness, but understanding, you know, your players and understanding, you know, maybe they need something a little different. And I think that's the case here. I think the Jets are a good team. He's a good coach. And he just felt that, you know, maybe they need something a little different. It's a much different situation than Vancouver, where a change was needed. Correct. And look at that, right? It's, you know, Bruce has got them flying high. So I don't know. It's very interesting. And I think because it doesn't happen very often, we're all kind of caught off guard.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe he dodged a bullet here too, because 3-4 days later, I mean, the Canadian teams are just in disarray right now. It's sad that we're back here, that the Canadian teams are playing, you know, the Montreal Canadiens, excuse me, are playing in an empty building, that fans in Toronto were going to be at half capacity with no food, no drinks. Meanwhile, American buildings they're still rocking at full capacity. I worry about the players' mental health. Some of them may be stuck in different places around the country that won't be able to be around their families for the holidays because of these protocols and lockdowns and positive tests. I mean, selfishly, I was going to be taking my youngest son to his first NHL game this Thursday for the afternoon Leafs game against the St. Louis Blues. Now that's postponed, and all cross-border games are postponed. I hope that this gets back on track to at least to where we were prior to this kind of shutdown as soon as January comes around, and let's get rolling, let's get cooking again, because we need fans in the building. We cannot go back to what we had last year with the Canadian division and no fans. It's tough to watch. It's tough for the players. They've all said it as well. I hope things get straightened out here.
Yeah, I mean, the health and safety of everyone physically and mentally is obviously of paramount importance. And, you know, hopefully with this shutdown, things will, you know, help subside and we can get back to business in the new year. We'll, you know, we'll see how things shake out. But I think, you know, the shutdown is probably for the best right now, given that, you know, every hour there's a new name popping up, and it's a lot, and it's tough for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they had to shut down the cross-border, because if any of these players were in the States and got it, they would be stuck there for the holidays, and that's not right. They couldn't be with their family. So now it's just a case of getting these guys back home. But, you know, because of all this, I think it's safe to say the Olympics it's over for the NHL players. There's no way they can do it now. I know there's been rumors that it is over, but no official announcements been made. The Canadian team just pulled out of the Spangler Cup. The World Junior exhibition games were canceled. I'm assuming the tournament's going to go on in Alberta, but with no fans, or at least a limited capacity. We do not need NHL players over there that badly. I get it. It's a great thing to have best-on-best world, you know, games, world dominance, and having these countries go at it, because it is great to see. But it's not worth it. The games are going to be played in the middle of the night. We're not even going to be able to see much of them. And then if an NHL player tests positive, he's got to stay back in China for 3, 4, 5 weeks, and he can't come back to play for his NHL team. It's not worth it. Just end it now.
Yeah, it seems to be heading that direction. And, you know, I agree with what you said here. I don't think I need to add anything more.
And I mean, now they can take, you know, once they cancel it, take that break, the Olympic break, start putting the games back in there, rework the schedule here for the second half, and let's get the games in. Now, speaking of the second half, kind of looking ahead, circled a couple teams I think that are going to have strong second halves and make a real push this year. And unfortunately, I'm going to start with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think they're going to get hot. They're going to get Point Kucherov back at full strength. They're already now first in the Atlantic. They worked themselves right back to that spot. They're going to be pushing for the three-peat. In the East as well, moving over to the Metro, I like the Washington Capitals. We got Backstrom. He's back. Ovi's playing for something. He's got a purpose every night chasing this Gretzky record, and the team feels it. Every game will be intense for that reason. Their play is going to elevate, and it's going to make the Washington Capitals real contenders this year. They're tied for first in the Metro with Carolina, who have been good, but we all know Freddie Anderson and how he does in the second half. gets tired, maybe a couple injuries, and who knows what's going to happen in the playoffs. I like Washington there. Moving to the West, Mike, I'm still waiting for Colorado to find their game. I think they're really good. When you look at their lineup on paper, they are really good. But McKinnon, you know, he's had a rough year, injuries, COVID, can't really get the ball rolling for him. But once maybe they cancel those Olympics, he can say, you know what, I'm going to take a week off here, get real healthy. I don't need to showcase myself anymore and start focusing on the Stanley Cup. The team, though, that I like in the West, Mike, is your Vegas Golden Knights. They've found their game. They've got their players back. Everyone's healthy. They're now leading the Pacific Division. What a turn of events. They were way down that lineup, looking up at the, you know, the Calgary Flames, Edmonton Oilers. They've passed them all now. Leonard was pulled last week. A little bit of concern on the goaltender front, but I think he's the number one goalie. He's their number one goalie, and he's going to be able to lead them. He doesn't need to be fantastic like Fleury was that year they went to the Cup, because this team is way better offensively. It'll allow Leonard just to make the saves he needs to make in order to get this team through the playoffs. I think they're a team to watch in the West.
Yeah, I agree with Vegas, you know, and they've shown year over year they are not afraid to make a deal.
Right.
In the latter part of the season, if they feel they need to add another piece, they've done it pretty much every year. So they've done a good job there, Kelly McCrimmon and the group, and you know, they'll be in things. I think Edmonton will get back firing up here once we restart. Another team that could look into, you know, the trade market in the Central. I think, you know, to your point, Colorado, as long as they get in, they're going to be a team nobody wants to play against. So, you know, like any sport, you get in the playoffs, anything's possible. East side, I do like Carolina, Washington, Rangers. I mean, you can never count out Pittsburgh with their experience. I think the Leafs are going to keep ahead of Tampa in the Atlantic. I think it's a good group. And, you know, to pick winners, I don't know. I mean, there's too much, I don't know if parity is the right word, but I think it's going to be, you know, I think the playoffs are going to be really interesting, and there's really no one or two teams that really stand out for me, at least not right now.
Now, this story should have been RT1. It was the biggest story in sports this weekend, and I would argue the biggest in pop culture in the last month, even bigger than Jen and Ben getting back together. Yes, I'm talking about Tiger back on the course, which will be RT5. Tiger Woods and his son Charlie participated in the father-son PNC Championship this weekend for the second consecutive year. But this year was different, with it being Tiger's first time back in competitive play since his near-fatal crash in February of this year. The Woods birdied 11 in a row on Sunday in day two of the tournament, but fell two strokes short of John Daly and his son for the title and the championship belts. Mike, are you ready to put a future odds on Charlie to win the Masters?
I hope so, man. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed watching them play. Watching Charlie hit, first off, this kid could kick my ass, hands down, and he's 12. Just watching him swing, watching the way he moves, you know, running up to catch his putt as he hits it, knowing it's going in. He is so like his father. Has a great swing. I hope, you know, he chooses to go and pursue golf. He obviously, you know, being 12 years old, he hasn't made up his mind, nor should he. But it was just so good to watch him and Tiger play. Nice to see Tiger back after everything he's gone through. And, you know, as a Tiger fan, as a fan of golf, just really hopeful that he's playing at Augusta in 4 months. I think that's what everyone would love to see. And, I mean, he's come a long way. He's come a real long way since his crash in February, where his leg, you know, amputated. He said amputation was a possibility. And here he is in December, playing with Charlie, having fun. That's what you love to see.
Yeah, watching Charlie and his dad, it's just cool. Like, that's what draws in. It's just so cool. Because to him, to Charlie, it's just his dad. Let's remember, he's only seen him win one major, right? So he wasn't really around for the whole Tiger craze. But to everyone else, watching this, it's our chance to watch greatness from a young age. So we believe. Obviously, right. Not putting any pressure on this kid. Let's remember, Tiger was known around the golf circles when he was Charlie's age at 12. But at the time, the golf circles wasn't that big, right? It wasn't a national thing. Golf wasn't as big as it is now, thanks to Tiger. It wasn't like that when he was 13, 14 years old, and people around golf said, there's this kid coming out of California. He's unbelievable. He's changing the golf world. He's hitting the ball further. That wasn't really known. There wasn't the cameras. There wasn't the highlights of a young Tiger on Sundays. And it wasn't until he won the three U.S. amateurs that people started paying attention to Tiger Woods on a more national level. Now, fans are probably hoping that they'll see that all over again with Charlie, but this time we'll all be in on it from the time that he was 12, 11 years old. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. He's not as good as his dad was, and obviously there's lots of time for that to change. Charlie's not even in the top 500 of players in his age category in the state of Florida. So yeah, he's a good golfer, but he's by no means a phenom right now. He's great to watch. His swing is perfect. And man, did he deliver on Sunday. Multiple times his dad was, long or to the right. And Charlie stuck it within 10 feet. Birdie putt, no problem. Spin that club. He had the look on his face. His putting was lights out. Smooth stroke. He seemed to have the right speed every single time. It helps when Tiger Woods is giving you the read. But it was great. Their mannerisms, just identical to see them. They did a couple split screens of what was going on. I mean, all the kids actually there, when they showed them with their dads, they all walked the same. They swung the same. They talked the same. Just the way they moved around the course. It was really cool to see. And I hope that a lot of these kids actually make it. In a lot of the other sports, you see it. We talked about, hockey, you got the Tkachuks. They've kind of made it. A lot of these, a lot of these younger players see their dads play and they make it in hockey and baseball, Ripken, bunch of them. But you don't see that much in golf yet, but hopefully we will with some of these kids now playing.
I almost started laughing and I had to hold myself when you said he's not even in the top 500 of golfers his age in the state of Florida. How you have that in front of you, man, kudos to you.
There's lots of information on the internet, Mike.
Well, I know there is, but I haven't been keeping up to date with the 12-year-old rankings for golf in the state of Florida. But, again, I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch and, hopefully, I think selfishly, all us Tiger fans want to see Charlie kind of take the torch from his dad and go that route. But if he doesn't, that's fine too. I know Sam, his daughter's big into soccer.
There you go.
And I think she's a pretty good player. So, they have the Woods genes, the superior athletes.
Little tease, as they call it in the business, we will be playing Would You Rather later, but I'm going to give Mike a Would You Rather right now. I've seen it out there quite a bit, so I'm going to ask you, would you rather see Charlie Woods become the youngest major winner, beating his dad, or would you rather see Tiger Woods become the oldest major winner, obviously beating Phil, who just won it at 50?
I think Charlie. We've seen Tiger win so much. Not that it gets, not that it gets any less special seeing him do it, but just seeing, Charlie play so well, I think that would be really cool to do what his dad has the record for, right? The youngest to win the major. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, I think Tiger winning as the oldest would be great. Would be another great comeback story for him and an ultimate comeback story with the injury. But you're right. It's Charlie, man, because if he wins at the youngest, you know what that means. That's another 20 years of Woods winning majors, and we will sign up for that right now.
And I'm still holding out hope that my boy Freddie can put together four magical rounds and win another green jacket.
Keep hoping. Keep circling his name on the Masters.
That's what we have to do, man. Without hope, what's the point?
Speaking of hope, it wasn't pretty this week, but I got lots of hope. I'm coming back this week in our NFL Pick'em. And if you would have told me 3 to 5 weeks ago that you and I would be tied going into week 16, I would have taken it because I was in a hole. Mike went 3-1 this week, winning with Kansas City, Indianapolis, and New Orleans, while I only won with Cincinnati. And the season series is now tied at 30 apiece. I have first pick. but let's first see the games. We start with the Thursday nighter, San Francisco -3.5 at Tennessee. Then we go to the Saturday game, Arizona -1 versus Indy. Sunday, New England -2.5 at home against the Buffalo Bills. And the Sunday nighter sees the Dallas Cowboys in a division game -10.5 versus Washington football team. And I'm going to start it off with that Sunday nighter. I think Dallas is a great team. I think Washington has fallen off now. Dallas has the chance win the division, finish it off, maybe rest a couple players near the end of the season. And let's go with Dallas blowing out Washington. I'll take the -10.5.
I am going to take the New England Patriots -2.5 after a tough loss this week. I think they're going to respond big and cement themselves as AFC East Division winners.
At home. That's what you like. You like them at home.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Saturday night. It was bad for the Cardinals. It's been bad for the Cardinals. They're way better than this. Murray's way better than this. And I still have no trust in the Colts. I'll take Arizona -1.
Love it, because I wanted Indy +1.
Oh, there you go.
There's this one's tough. Thursday nighter. You know, Tennessee looked to be in command against Pittsburgh and then let it slip away. And San Fran's been playing real well right now. They're one of the better teams. But in Tennessee, they have to keep Indy away from the division lead and keep themselves in the playoff hunt. You know, 3.5 points on the road against a division, or sorry, a playoff caliber team. I'm taking the Titans +3.5 Thursday night against San Fran.
Perfect. So this week, I got San Fran -3.5. Well, Mike's got Tennessee. I got Arizona -1. Mike's on the Colts. Mike taking the New England Patriots -2.5. I'm on the Bills. And I got the Dallas Cowboys -10.5. And Mike's on Washington. That wraps up our T5. We have a short break. And as I mentioned, we got Would You Rather? And obviously, our pick of the week. So stick around. The holiday makes you want to play the classics. Let It Snow, We Wish You a Merry Christmas, Home Alone, Christmas Vacation, and of course, Would You Rather. Mike, what's your favorite Christmas movie of all time?
Hands down, Christmas Vacation.
Interesting. I like that too. I like it. Home Alone always hits the spot, but Home Alone, you almost just want to fast forward to the last 40 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the dinner scene's always good with Buzz, but a close second for me, The Santa Claus with Tim Allen.
Right.
Fantastic piece of cinematic brilliance.
Interesting.
It was actually filmed in Oakville, I think, your neck of the woods.
Yeah, he falls right off the roof. Old Timmy had a couple cocktails up there. All right, well, let's jump in. We got four good Would You Rathers, Mike, so let's hear what side you're on, and I'll give my opinion after that. With the bowl games, NBA games, and now even NFL games all over the holidays, it made me think, if you're a professional athlete, would you rather play on Christmas Day or would you rather play on New Year's Day?
For me, I'm picking New Year's Day. Christmas is my favorite time of the year. I enjoy doing nothing on Christmas Day other than the usual eating, opening presents, giving presents, etc. I don't want to be playing. I would rather play on New Year's Day than Christmas Day.
I'm taking Christmas Day. Play the game at noon. Have your family in town. They can either come to the game or they can stay back at the mansion watching the game on the big screen I got. They can cook the food, get it all prepared. Maybe we even have it catered. Who knows? Some appies out there for those people that like it. You play your ass off in front of millions of people because there's nothing else on TV. So everyone's watching you play. You do a little post-game interview. You have a shower. Then you have your driver get you home in time for them to cut the turkey, open a bottle of wine. I love it. I'll take that one. Because if you play on New Year's Day, it just gets lost. Not to mention you have to be quiet on New Year's Eve. I love it. Back when I was a kid, Russia used to send an all-star team over to Ontario, and they would play various junior A tier 2 teams around, and they always played the Streetsville Derbies at 12 o'clock at old Vic Johnson Arena, and we would go watch it. The only problem was these were, you know, 17, 18, 19-year-old guys wanting to get after it on New Year's Eve, but they would have curfew, and I always would hear the crazy stories about the curfew call would come in, Derby players sneaking out, maybe even finding a couple of the Russian guys, showing them a night on the town, and then doing battle the next day in front of a sold-out Vic Johnson Arena. I'll take Christmas Day because I want to really enjoy myself on New Year's Eve.
You're a more adventurous man than I suppose.
Number two, as the NFL season nears the end and these two teams have yo-yo type of seasons, the question is, would you rather be a Buffalo Bills fan today or a Tampa Bay Bucks fan today?
As bad as they looked on Sunday night, it's hard to go against Tom consistently. I think the Buccaneers, you know, have a better team right now than the Bills. I think defensively, the Bucs are a little stronger, should win their division, should have a home game for the playoffs. Buffalo doesn't look like that's going to be the case unless they beat New England this week. So, you know, both teams have their issues, but they do have their pluses as well. But right now, I'd saddle up with Tom and the Buccaneers.
Yeah, I'm on the Bucs as well. 10-4, they're going to win the division. They're going to have a tough round matchup, the Rams, maybe the 49ers. We talked about them already. But at least it's going to be at home in the nice weather. The Bills are going to have to squeak into a wild card spot. And then they're going to have to go on a run on the road throughout the playoffs, which is going to be tough for them. I truthfully actually don't like either of these teams' chances. I think they're both done for the season already. But I'll take the Bucs. Plus, if I'm a fan of the Bucks, I'm in nice warm FLA while Bills Mafia is in for a long, cold winter. Now, number three, we all know Urban Meyer has been gassed from Jacksonville, and it made me think, would you rather be a college football coach or would you rather be an NFL coach?
It's funny because I was hoping at some point we would get to this one for a would you rather, and I'm glad we finally did. For me, it would be college. I think seeing what a lot of these coaches in the last few weeks are signing for, it's insane. Multiple year deals, multiple millions of dollars, private jets, houses, you name it, they get it. NFL, I mean, you have one or two bad seasons or 14 games, you're gone. You know, I think college, it seems like you have a longer tenure or a longer leash, I should say, which can allow you to have a longer tenure in some places. Plus, you start at a school, build up their program, you can leave your kind of legacy, get a program up to a higher standard maybe, and build that. And move on to another school, perhaps. So there's a lot more jobs as well in college, so there's a lot more opportunities. But I just think there's a little bit more security and a real opportunity to build a program the way you envision it, rightly or wrongly.
Yep. For me, it's college too, Mike. A lot of the same things you said. Big school. I want to be at a big school where they treat me like a god. I get to pick my own groceries and I get to serve the dinner. Appetizers as well if I want. I don't have some GM telling me what players we got to trade for. I don't have to worry about the draft. I only have to worry about making a few parents like me enough to send their kids to my school. And that's the only thing that matters. Plus, the buyouts are amazing for some of these coaches, and you always seem to land another job because there are so many schools, and you can bounce around and have a whole career, 15, 20, 30 years if you want, just coaching football, making millions. You go to a new area, new school, they don't care what happened to you and why you got fired at Ohio State or why you got booted out of LSU. They just care about what you're going to do in their town for their school, and the boosters are willing to pay for it.
The recruitment aspect of it as well, that's really exciting. You know, the pursuit of, I mean, it's, I guess in a sense, it's a lot like free agency, but you're obviously hindered by the cap in the NFL, right? You can only have so many players, so many millions. In college, you're trying to recruit the best of the best and, you know, really establish roots in certain areas. So there's just a lot to like there.
Yeah. Well, my kids, as I've mentioned, they've been home for the holidays now, and it reminded me of my Christmas vacations, which were spent playing video games for 17 hours each day. Hence why my thumbs still click every once in a while when I move them in the wrong direction. So it made me think, would you rather play the Tiger Woods video game, or would you rather play Madden?
I have both. I've been playing both for numerous years, still do. While the Tiger, I don't know what, I think it's EA Sports Golf now. But the one thing for me that I didn't like about the Tiger Woods golf games is they don't have enough courses. The one year, you know, I think arguably everybody's favorite tournament is the Masters. And one year they had the licensing to have Augusta National, the Masters, the music. I think it was like 2014 or something like that. I think
they called it the Masters Edition.
Yeah, I think you're right. And my brother had a PS2 still, and I borrowed it from him and rented the game. This was a few years back, but it's obviously much different. So for me, you know, football, you got every single player, you got every single team, stadiums, uniforms, all that stuff. I just feel like the golf, if there was more courses and more players available to select, it would be even better. So I have to side with Madden because everything's in front of you.
For me, it's Tiger Woods. I had to make my own player. I got to take him through Q school, work your way onto the web.com tour before finally getting a taste of the PGA tour. You get sponsorships, you get to buy new clothes, you get new clubs, you test yourself against the best in the majors, and you work your way towards a Hall of Fame career. I like Madden too, but sometimes the plays can just get too complicated, and I would just give up, and I'd eventually just end up throwing Hail Marys every single play, and that doesn't work. So I think I'd rather play Tiger Woods and work on my game, work on my short game, figure out my putting using the Tiger Vision. I like the golf aspect of it, build a career. That's the way I would go. Although I will say, really, I was an NHL kid. I played NHL, built a franchise, and went all the way through as many years as I could. That was my game of choice.
The old franchise mode, can't beat it.
Yeah. Well, each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. Last week, my game was actually canceled or postponed due to COVID, and Mike took the Packers covering, which didn't happen. Therefore, Mike, I guess you technically still have the tee. Let us know your pick.
Yeah, they kind of screwed me last week in my tremendous hot streak, so I'm going to pick them this week. Baltimore Ravens are underdogs at Cincinnati by 3 points right now. I was really impressed with Tyler Huntley over the past couple weeks, you know, playing so well against Green Bay. This is a big divisional game. They need to respond against the Bengals, who haven't looked great. You know, this game could decide the division. So I'm going to take the Ravens on the road, +3.
Nice. I'm going to Sunday, Boxing Day, where I will be on the couch all day watching football. And I'm going to take my Chicago Bears +7 against the Seattle Seahawks. I think the Seahawks are done. And 7 points is a nice little bonus. Russell Wilson wants out. I think they're going to have coaching changes. They're going to have personnel changes. I think they just are giving up. Let's get a high pick. So the Bears, they're coming for them. Justin Fields is going to have a great day. I like him. Maybe even a little sprinkle on the Bears money line just for fun on a beautiful Boxing Day. Let's hope for cold weather and snow so that my rink will freeze and the kids can be out there skating while me, I'm on the couch. Now, we want to hear from you, so make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts.
Can't lose.
Oh, yeah.